The numbers told the story, they always do.
This is A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
Good Friday morning here on A Numbers Game presented by BetMGM. So excited to have you all along here. I'm Ben Wilson from the South Point Sportsbook Studio here in Las Vegas. Pleasure to fill in for Gil Alexander and also for Jeff Parles. I'm like the tertiary fill-in here. Jeff feeling a little bit under the weather today. But we do have a fun guest list today. We're going to get into continue our deep dive NFL conversation as we ramp up for the 2022 NFL season, starting with Eric Edholm, longtime NFL reporter, going to join us here in about a half hour. Also, our good friend, Mr. Dr. Eric Eager. I don't know if that's how we're officially supposed to talk about the doctor, Eric Eager, Pro Football Focus analyst, will join us in about 45 minutes. You get a whole half hour of the wide world of Weingarten today on this show. Jason Weingarten talks his Jason has some more ridiculous futures thoughts here in Major League Baseball coming out of the second half. I might throw some in-season win totals at Jason, see what he thinks of those, as he'll join us at the top of the 11 o'clock Eastern hour. And then Dave Ross, he'll be in studio here. Excited for that. Half hour of Dave talks some UFC, maybe some golf. We never know what topics we'll hit on when Dave Ross is in the house. That is coming up at the end of the show at 11:30. So fun show on tap today. Elliot Bauman, our producer, behind the glass. You know, Elliot, clearly they had to figure something out when Jeff was sick to make sure we still had two Missouri alumni in this studio today. So a couple of former Missouri Tigers here. Me on the desk, Elliot behind the glass. What a beautiful sight that is, Elliot. So, good morning. You want to say good morning? Okay. Elliot said good morning. Thanks, Elliot, for at least saying good morning. Wanted to start off. Right after this show ended yesterday, and by now everybody knows what happened with the Kyler Murray contract, but that came out probably around noon to 1 o'clock Eastern hour. So that was happening right after we wrapped up yesterday. Just some quick thoughts there. Now that it's funny because to me it's, like, this was something we figured was going to happen really the whole time, right? This was not really a shock that Kyler Murray gets paid here, where he makes a $230.5 million contract over five seasons, now second highest paid quarterback in the NFL. What I found interesting, though, is it's just the general narrative, not in the way the betting market has changed, because it hasn't. And again, the market was always set up to believe that this was a situation where Kyler Murray was always going to return. It's more interesting to me now that this is concrete and we know that Kyler is going to be back in Arizona, it's just this general sense now where we've kind of looked at, all right, what have we seen out of Kyler Murray, Cliff Kingsbury, and the Cardinals over the last couple of years, and how is that going to apply in 2022? And we've sort of gone into this, like, I don't know if it's just a convenient narrative to fall into of, well, clearly they're a team that gets off to really good starts and then they just fade down the stretch. So now that Kyler's in for this year and we know he'll be there at the start of training camp, that's definitely just going to happen now going forward. That's just sort of an assumption. It's interesting to me that we immediately go there, especially in an NFL, a specific league, right, where you have so much variance from year to year. You see teams all the time go from making the playoffs to completely dropping off. We've had this discussion when it comes to alt win totals, where you can find value there if you have a lot of conviction on a particular team, simply because so many teams usually either way overperform their preseason expectations or go way under. Arizona, for what it's worth, 8.5 on the win total, third betting favorites coming out of the NFC West this year, about a 4-1 divisional favorite, depending on the shop, and about even money, slightly juiced to the no there, not to miss the playoffs there. So slightly favorites to not be in that end of season tournament. But it's it's so lazy to just look at this and say, well, Kyler's in, they're definitely going to get off to a good start. And then it just kind of depends how much they have in the tank going down the stretch for Arizona. And if you actually look at the rest of this, you know, the rest of this roster, to me, coming into last year and even the past couple of years, there were so many things to like about what Arizona had. From if you start on the defensive side with how unheralded a guy Chandler Jones was, remember, he had five sacks in the opener last year, even though he was playing through a contract dispute and said he wanted to be traded. Jones now out, no longer in Arizona, now in Las Vegas this year. And you think about what Arizona had at the wide receiver positions, which is certainly compromised this year with DeAndre Hopkins getting the 6-game suspension to start the season. By the way, Kyler Murray completed 75% of his passes to DeAndre Hopkins over the last two seasons for an over 122 quarterback rating. I have to think that's got to impact the rest of his game, at least to a degree. And so when I actually look in Pro Football Focus, I mentioned Eric Eager will come on later. The Pro Football Focus guys, they've done their full position by position breakdowns. And this is not meant to be, you know, the one list, you know, the end all be all here to what we evaluate, right, for our general position groups in the National Football League. But you look at what Arizona projects out this year, 25th on the offensive line, 16th in the wide receiver room, which could certainly have some variance depending on how much perceived value you think you get out of DeAndre Hopkins over the final 11 games of the year, and 23rd in the running back room, where we saw Chase Edmonds fail to stay healthy last year. And certainly that was where James Conner took over, but you have a couple of veteran guys who don't exactly inspire a whole lot of confidence. Overall, the roster from the ESPN Pro Football Focus general season breakdown here coming in, 23rd overall out of the 32 teams. Not really a situation where you would think, well, this should be a team, especially a team that has shown serious issues to always finish out a season strong. You look at all those roster breakdowns, you wouldn't exactly think, well, that's a team I would have as essentially a pick'em to make the playoffs this year. It's just because of the fact you now get Kyler signed, and this is, to me, really a non-story. It was always going to happen. We naturally get into the, well, all right, if they just get off to a good start, it's possible. That's where I say, look at the schedule that we have shown right here. And it is the eighth toughest schedule this year. If you look for Moore and Sharp, he published all of these based on the fellow Vegas win totals this year for all 32 teams in the National Football League. Cardinals 24th on the strength of schedule. And I mean, you see why. You have really three pretty brutal stretches, three little clusters there starting the year, which is usually where Arizona is at its strength. Again, if I'm saying usually, my point in all this is to say, I just think that's a complete fallacy that just because they've happened to do it 2 years in a row against a pretty soft schedule out of the gates, that Arizona is just automatically a bet on team early and a bet against team late. There's so many other variables and random factors to me that go into that. And when you look at the Chiefs, Raiders, Rams to open the season, and then Rams, Niners, Chargers week 10 through 12, and even to an extent, I mean, Pats at Broncos in December, Bucks weeks 14 through 16 out of the bye. And with one of the latest bye weeks, I believe that is the latest bye week of anybody in the National Football League in week 13. It puts me in a position where, if anything, and again, it's not that the market has overreacted or really moved on this, because it hasn't. It's not one of those situations, though, where just because Arizona now has their guy locked in for a five-year extension, I find any reason to want to back Arizona coming into this year. It has not changed my opinion whatsoever. It just fascinates me that we sometimes try to find edges, especially in a league like the NFL that is the toughest market to bet into and one that always has the sharpest lines from the preseason to to every single week you go through the schedule. And we're looking for those little angles, and yet bookmakers know exactly what everybody else is saying. They know we've been talking about the whole angle of good start, bad finish. It's just not that simple. And to me, this is the most fascinating, most important year of the Cliff Kingsbury tenure, now that he rolls into another year where they've come up short each of the past couple seasons. And what do you get out of the gates? That to me remains to be seen. But if anything, to me, it is an under team, at least as of right now. Again, I need to do more of the deep diving on Arizona, but simply because you're one guy who you're already assuming would be there is not just magically going to fix a lot of the other problems that this team has going on. What was also just comical about yesterday was you find out now with, I don't know if this was done on purpose just to get him over this certain threshold, but the fact that Kyler Murray now makes more per year than the entire Oakland A's payroll combined. Oakland A's are at about $43 million. Kyler going to be making just a shade over 46 per season. And the fact that Kyler was drafted, I mean, first overall by the Oakland A's, a team that is on the Oakland A's are on about a 59 win pace right now. Even though they did split a doubleheader yesterday against Detroit, they're drawing about 3,000 fans a game and have made it pretty obvious they are looking to sell off anybody with any perceived value at the deadline whatsoever. Frankie Montas presumably will be the last pitcher to drop. He pitched what we think will be his penultimate start last night there in an Oakland A's uniform. I just find the whole juxtaposition really interesting, where you look at what, you know, Kyler's decision, obviously from a money standpoint, right decision. But for these baseball teams that have made it so clear that they have no desire in winning right now, and the ownership group has it's not like Oakland is new to this, but ownership groups that have made it extremely clear and abundant that it is not going to invest whatsoever in the product on the field, I still wonder if the books really have found a way to adjust for that in, say, like a season win totals market, or even in the adjusted win totals market. Oakland was a great example where, 69.5 was the preseason win total for a team that was not even attempting to put out any semblance of a product on the field. And as soon as Sean Manaea was dealt about a week before the season started, that number started to tumble a little bit. But it's just another example of, for some of these teams at the bottom, and it represents Major League Baseball's large chasm right now between the haves at the top and the have-nots at the bottom, but also the willingness to actually spend, it to me becomes a whole other conversation of, I still think there are opportunities to actually take advantage of that in the betting markets. Look at a team like Baltimore, who's been that's been the story of the first half. Baltimore Orioles, 500 so far. They're still 10-1 to make the playoffs. But we've seen stories come out. It sounds like Baltimore is looking to sell off some of their guys at the deadline, where Jorge Lopez, their closer, has been in trade conversations with the New York Mets. Trey Mancini is another piece who could be on the move. Mets have been rumored for him as well. Toughest strength of schedule remaining second half of the year. As tough as that would have to be, if you're an Orioles fan, you've watched so much bad baseball and an ownership group that hasn't really been willing to spend. All of a sudden, you're actually half decent. You're filling Camden Yards again. And now they just want to sell once more. That would infuriate me so much as a fan, but at least as a bettor, I see at DraftKings, they're in season regular, their regular season win total prop now 75.5. So you're basically going to have to play at this point, it would be 5 games under 500. So that's somewhat baked in. That's still a lot to ask for a team who is clearly in sell mode and who's 500 right now with the toughest schedule left in Major League Baseball. I just find it amazing. You compare the NFL to Major League Baseball, the discussion is entirely different, like two separate worlds, essentially. We'll discuss some U.S. Open tennis. This is a tennis show, after all. Talk about some of those early odds when we return here on A Numbers Game. It is time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM has all of your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds specials, and much more. Download the BetMGM app today and stop by any MGM casino on the strip with your state-issued ID to open an account and start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. We are just getting started. It's A Numbers Game presented by BetMGM. I'm Ben Wilson from our South Point Sportsbook studio. Happy to be along for the next couple of hours here. Elliot Bauman, our outstanding producer behind the glass. We got Kev in the house on audio. Jeff Jens, Liz Foster, our technical director, downstairs keeping the show running smoothly here on a Friday morning. We will have a bunch of guests still to come today. Eric Hedholm going to join us next segment talking some more NFL after we open the show with some of those Arizona Cardinals, Kyler Murray thoughts. But want to transition to really the last major championship of the year in the individual sports. Golf, we're done with the four major championships. We'll still have the Tour Championship to come at the end of the year. For the tennis, though, and as I said going into our last break, this is a tennis show here at A Numbers Game. I am certainly going to make an attempt to keep that rolling, even in Gil's absence here from the show. But U.S. Open tennis, that gets started here in about a month's time is when the main draw will actually get underway. August 29th from Flushing Meadows, one of the best, for American sports fans, one of the best in-person events you can watch from a sports, just from a sports viewing perspective, just an incredible experience if you're able to go hit up Arthur Ashe Stadium, go walk around the grounds there, go to an event there at the U.S. Open. But what I'm fascinated in by the odds right now, and this is something that we saw in the Australian Open with Novak Djokovic, the controversial billing of whether he would actually be able to compete leading into that tournament, and we saw how books were pretty slow to move on that information. And keep in mind, here we're at in a point where, all sort of COVID-related handicapping is pretty much gone now in the majority of the sports. It's not really something we deal with anymore. But the one thing it still applies to is in tennis, where because of the just general international nature of this sport and how worldwide the WTA and ATP tours really are, as opposed to being strictly U.S.-based like most of the other sports that we all watch and bet on, this is an interesting, it's just an interesting dynamic where because of different countries' vaccination rules for different foreign nationals, you've had a lot of wildly varying, I would say, protocols in place for a lot of these players. Novak Djokovic flies to Australia as the tournament favorite member back in January, is denied entry into the country, again, not being unvaccinated, and is essentially forced to go in like a government hotel and then fly home, wasn't even allowed to enter. We talked about this way back in January. We tried to get out in front of the betting markets on that and pick off some numbers that were certainly not going to be there whenever that ultimate decision happened, which we all kind of figured the case would be. Like, we just figured there's no way Djokovic would play. So you fast forward now he was allowed to play at the French, allowed to play at Wimbledon, but the U.S. Open, he's not going to be allowed to play. He is, again, not. He said this right after the Wimbledon championship, which he won, in the press conference, says, I have no plans of getting vaxxed. I don't presume the U.S. Open is going to allow me to come to play, since the U.S. requires all foreign nationals visiting to be vaccinated right now. That's just the rule. And how can we apply that to the handicapping is kind of the point I want to make here. Because if you look at the odds, which we'll show from BetMGM, and this is not just MGM, it is every single book out there, Novak Djokovic is, not only is he listed on the odds board, he is a $1.60 favorite to win a U.S. Open that I would set the realistic odds of him competing in the U.S. Open at about 2%. I would say there's a 1% chance he decides to get vaccinated. And actually, there's probably a less than 1% chance of that. And there's like a 1% chance that the U.S. decides, actually, yeah, it's okay for foreign nationals to come in regardless of vaccination status. Again, I'm just throwing those random numbers out there. It's really realistically probably more like less than 1%. Now, here's the thing that we saw, though, from the Australian Open that can kind of lead us into finding some value here on this board, where naturally, and I understand this from the book's perspective, they don't want to say, all right, we're not even going to offer Djokovic because we don't think he's playing. And as a result, now, like, all of a sudden, if he somehow is able to play and things change at the last second, well, now you find yourselves in a really tricky spot as a bookmaker where you haven't even been offering a guy who would be the presumptive favorite. And that's just not a situation you can put yourself in. So I get why they have him posted. The other element of this is, like, you theoretically could you put Djokovic at, say, 100-1 and just say all bets are action, right? And if he doesn't play, then now you lose your bet. You could. Theoretically, you could. But as books have shown us, it's not something they're really willing to do. So as a result, you can't really find a middle ground and say, well, we'll make Djokovic like 25-1. Because if that was the case and you were refunding his bet if he didn't play, well, it would just be an absolute cascade of money on Novak Djokovic. So this isn't me saying the books are idiotic for doing this. I get exactly why Djokovic has to still be on the board and why he has to be the favorite. That part of the logistics makes a lot of sense to me. Now, we've seen a little bit of adjustment. If you see, there's four other guys in single digits right now on the odds board, which is not at all what we saw at the Australian Open, where it was essentially Daniil Medvedev and Alexander Zverev. Those were the two other guys in single digits. I remember pouncing all over Zverev, had some amazing 8-9-1 numbers on Zverev at the Aussie Open, only for him to completely choke and collapse. I think in the fourth round there when he lost to Denis Shapovalov. But the principle still applies, where even though there's a few more guys now who have been shortened a little bit, still think you can find some good numbers, and it might not necessarily be on these guys at the very, very top. Because if you look at it, you have Rafael Nadal, who is going to be playing in this, if he plays in the tournament, and that's not even guaranteed, he will be playing in it less than 100%, compromised after playing through injury. Remember, this is a guy, the ultimate warrior in the game of tennis right now, who legitimately had to retire and withdraw from Wimbledon before a semifinal because of the torn muscle he suffered in that quarterfinal win. And for a guy like Rafael Nadal to do that, and considering you have basically just over a month to get yourself completely ready for the U.S. Open to start, I'm not convinced Nadal even suits up. So now you've got two of the top five guys on the odds board who, one, Djokovic is not playing, and two, Nadal might play, but is a guy who has proven to us he will battle and be a tough out no matter what, but it's going to be significantly less than 100%. Now you start looking at other guys because you're thinking, all right, well, where do we go from here? I mean, this has to make, you know, there's got to be options. Now you have Charlie Alcaraz, as young Gil would say, a guy who is third on the odds board. By far, this will be, I wouldn't say by far, his worst surface. It became pretty obvious that grass would be the worst surface for Alcaraz and in his struggles there to find consistency. But he's a guy who prefers the slower hard court, like what we saw in Indian Wells, which led right into his very, very good clay court season and his run to the semis at the French Open. Carlos Alcaraz, on a faster surface like the U.S. Open, a little similar to what we see in some of these other, like Aussie Open and US Open, a little more comparable than, say, an Indian Wells, which is a much slower surface on hard. This is not really an event for Alcaraz. And he's kind of reached his peak in the market right now. He's going to be a guy who probably goes, goes to another gear next season and is one that will certainly be in the mix to win a French Open going forward, and probably multiple French Opens at that, and probably some other slams mixed in there as well. But that's a really short number. And it's funny because I think he and Daniil Medvedev are the two guys that the books have identified where, like, they get that Djokovic probably won't play. So they've shortened those two guys the most specifically. And Alcaraz, I don't think you can really play, not at that number, certainly. And I don't think in general he's a guy I would want suited to this faster U.S. Open hard court that we are generally going to see. So right away, I'm ruling out three of the first four guys. So Daniil Medvedev, like, if there is a guy you bet, it's him, just to have somebody in pocket at plus 240. But, like, if you further go down the line here, Alexander Zverev, not trustworthy whatsoever. All you have to do is Zverev is just go through the results, not even at majors, just his tournaments in general. This is a guy who at one point had a potential to be a top three or four player in the current world form, with Roger Federer out injured and Djokovic dealing with all the travel bans because of his lack of vaccination. And yet Zverev had a complete mental breakdown against Nadal and Acapulco, choked against Shapovalov at the Australian Open, has not been a factor in either of the two subsequent majors. I don't trust Zverev whatsoever at 8-1. Stefanos Tsitsipas has basically been a choke job machine his entire career on tour. At 10-1, and it's not like this surface is his best either, can't get behind him. Dominic Thiem is coming off injury at 20-1. Roger Federer, I give about a 5% chance of actually playing in this. He's at 20-1. That offer is only there just because Federer said he was targeting the end of summer for return, and if the U.S. Open starts at the end of summer, so naturally his name is on the odds board. Look, I mean, between Jannik Sinner, Felix Auger-Aliassime, I would even go as far as to say Matteo Berrettini at 28-1, who's had great recent form, even though grass is his strongest surface. Berrettini, who was undefeated in the grass season before being forced to withdraw with a COVID positive test there at Wimbledon right before his first round match. Berrettini, who's made a couple of deep runs into the quarters, semis here at the U.S. Open. I give, like, the Sinner, Auger-Aliassime, depending on the numbers you get, Berrettini. I give those three guys. I certainly feel like if you want to mix and match your bets, even way ahead of when the draw will come out, those are the guys you look at for this year's U.S. Open. It is very rare we have said that about a men's tennis grand slam in a really, really long time, where it is that open on the odds board. But as we've just laid out, there's a reason why. Medvedev's got to be in your account, though, if you want to go that route. But the value down the board, so juicy. It is really, really juicy heading into the U.S. Open. All right, we're going to talk some NFL. Eric Edholm, NFL reporter, joins the show next year on A Numbers Game. The VSiN Summer Special is here. For only $19, you get everything VSiN has to offer from now to the end of July. Sign up today and you'll get VSiN's daily best bets, including Adam Burke on Major League Baseball, plus NFL preseason coverage, premium articles on golf, UFC, and NASCAR. If you want the full VSiN experience, which features the daily best bets email, every edition of Point Spread Weekly, plus use of our betting tools and a live video stream whenever you want it, the cost is only $19 to be a subscriber through July 31st. Sign up now at VSiN.com/summer. Running out of days in the month of July, guys. $2.11 per day, by the way, if you want the exact daily calculations on that. You could have done a lot better about a week ago, but you know what? You snooze, you lose. $2.11 a day. Ben Wilson back with you from our South Point Sportsbook studio here in Las Vegas. Time to go back into the National Football League as we discuss all things NFL with Eric Edholm, who you see it with NFL Media, a longtime reporter there for the National Football League. Follow him at Eric_Edholm on Twitter. Eric, it is such a pleasure having you back here on A Numbers Game. Let's just start with the news of the last couple of days with Kyler Murray and what this deal will actually mean here for Arizona going forward. We've seen the betting markets kind of anticipate the signing coming back here, where they're set at an 8.5 win total. Realistically here, seems like this was something that was always going to happen, but what is next now for Arizona, a team that's going to be without one of its top assets in DeAndre Hopkins for 6 games? There's been a lot of turnover roster-wise. Like, what do you expect now that at least Kyler is there? What's that kind of the next step for this team to have to figure out as it gets closer and closer to the start of the season?
Yeah, I think it was an important step. I mean, there was some tension between the two sides. This wasn't completely smooth sailing to get to this point, but that's part of the negotiation thing. And you know, that's all water under the bridge now, and I think Arizona's got to be happy. It's been a bit of a strange offseason. Obviously, you know, losing Christian Kirk forced the, I guess, compelled them to trade for Hollywood Brown, as you mentioned, the Hopkins suspension. The good news is, though, they have their head coach, their GM, and their quarterback under contract. You know, we just now have to determine if this is the right group, if this is the right trio. I mean, at times, Murray's been great. You know, we've seen Cliff Kingsbury have maybe a little more success than I think some people expected. But last year was, you know, the bottom really did fall out late. They were a very, very good team for a big, long stretch, even missing Murray and Hopkins for a couple games there. And the end of the season, though, didn't turn out the way the first two-thirds of the year did. So it's a tough division, as you got, you know, as everybody knows. I mean, the Rams obviously coming off the championship, and the 49ers kind of reloading, if you will, and reconfiguring. We don't know what Seattle's going to be, but I think, you know, there's going to be a fierce battle for third place, and first and second, you know, could go in any order. So you probably jumble those three teams up, and any of them could finish first, but Cardinals still have some work to do, and not having a pass rush is going to be an issue too. So there's a lot to figure out.
Yeah, no question. The thing we started the show talking off with, Eric, is the fact that we've seen this kind of narrative develop where, okay, two seasons where you've had really nice starts for Arizona out of the gates, and then it's tailed off, as we've talked about here down the stretch. How much do you like put stock into that from a league that has basically defined itself by variance in the National Football League? Like, is there something you've looked at that's kind of quantifiable in what Arizona has done early that has separated themselves from some of these other teams? Since you look at it naturally, and it is one of the tougher schedules, especially right out of the gates those first three weeks. Like, is this just a random thing we've happened to see? Or has there actually been something to this, what Arizona's been able to do early on, since they're desperately going to need that without a top weapon and facing a tough schedule here to start off?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, it's 2 years does not necessarily make a trend, right? But obviously you want to see if there's any kind of, you know, correlation there or anything that, you know, adds up to suggest that this is a team that can start fast and then tail off for whatever reason. I don't know that there's any kind of correlation between those two things, and not having Hopkins early is obviously going to be an issue. So, yeah, I mean, it could be the opposite this year. You know, they could easily start off with a slow start and really, you know, put themselves behind the eight ball, if you will. But yeah, I mean, I would say Kansas City and they've got the Rams early on. You know, a couple other tough games in the mix, and they have a later bye week. So, you know, hard to know what to make of this team. I mean, Cliff Kingsbury's, I think, drawn some criticism for the play calling, the in-game decisions in some of those close games has kind of come back to bite them a little bit. You know, teams have maybe kind of caught up with them a little bit as the season has gone on. Kyler has played hurt too. And some of his effectiveness has kind of waned as the season has gone on. Is he going to be the same runner he was? You know, I mean, I think that's a question you could have with Josh Allen and other running quarterbacks. A lot of them get to the point where they want to sort of be more of the passer and less of the scrambler. I don't know if Murray's effectiveness would be the same in that situation. And as the season goes on and he takes more wear and tear, you know, you're less prone to take off with the ball in your hand.
No question. Eric Edholm joining us right now on A Numbers Game, the NFL reporter for NFL Media here, Eric_Edholm on Twitter. We also saw, as far as signings go, some other smaller ones, including Josh Rosen, the return of Rosen. He is back in the NFL, was the backup in Tampa, or in Atlanta, I should say, last year, threw a couple passes and threw a couple interceptions in that time. So he gets signed by Cleveland. Are we like, could this be the day? Could this be like the Friday news dump day it actually happens for Deshaun Watson? Or is this signing here just kind of the thing you were expecting, just to have somebody in the room behind a Jacoby Brissett there, Eric, the whole time, from at least Cleveland's perspective of trying to have some sort of contingency plan here in place?
Yeah, I mean, you knew they'd make some kind of transactional move. I mean, I believe that was it Joshua Dobbs, I think, was the only other quarterback under contract for Cleveland. You know, I think all along, obviously, the Browns have been bracing for a suspension. The slow news leak the last couple of days has suggested that 8 games, maybe the number. You know, it's kind of significant too. If you're, I mean, just from an optics standpoint, that's now less than a half season. You know, with the 17 game slate, you're talking less than 50% of the games. And you know, is it that significant in and of itself? No, but it gives people a kind of a talking point if they're irritated about Watson and they want a stiffer suspension and all that. But from a transactional standpoint, having that third quarterback during that eight-game stretch or whatever it ends up being, 8, 10, 12, whatever, you know, it's obviously important that Rosen, you know, is he going to be able to revive his career at all or get a chance to be a starter at some point? Who knows? But obviously Brissett figures to go in as the starter. Rosen would get a great chance to be the backup if he can beat out Dobbs. And then they welcome Watson back at some point. So, you know, Cleveland's got the roster to win. And if they can get Watson for more than half the season, you know, if he ends up coming back and playing nine games and possibly the postseason as well, this has got to be considered a huge win for Cleveland. And, you know, the league's obviously going to have its view of what the suspension was and whether it was just or not. But from the Browns' perspective, you have to think that if it does go down that way, they'll be in better shape than a lot of people anticipated not that long ago.
Yep. Look, I personally was just rooting for Rosen to get signed by the Carolina Panthers just so we could say we had – three quarterbacks, all in the top 10 in the same class.
Rosen Darnold battle, wouldn't that have
been the most? Yeah, would have been the most amazing thing of all time. Unfortunately, I did not get my wish. Yes, chosen Rosen now. Oh well, what are you going to do? You just finished up too. You had your AFC South previews. Those are just posted now at NFL.com. Eric, so since that's kind of the freshest thing I know you were just writing about, wanted to transition to that division with you. And Jacksonville's been a very unique team to look at this offseason, where they've gotten some love in the betting markets with their win total been bet up here by a win or so, and you're seeing them in the in that 6.5 to 7 range. What do you make of, just from the perspective of washing the stink off the Urban Meyer regime, bringing in a proven winner in the past like a Doug Peterson, how big of a jump do you expect for Jacksonville here now that it is year two of Trevor Lawrence and it's a new, at least somewhat football savvy regime coming in that at least has been in a professional setting here in the past there with the Doug Peterson and the way he'll lead that team?
Right. I think there's a respect factor with Peterson. I mean, you know, did things obviously turn sour in Philly? Yeah, but you can't take the Super Bowl win away from him. And I think you can't take away and it's not just the, hey, boys, let's go get some ice cream vibe, but I think it's just a totally, you know, a total departure from what they had in Meyer. And that alone is going to provide some, you know, I think a little more ease, a little more comfort. You know, Lawrence is kind of a, you know, laid back, you know, different vibe kid than I think Urban Meyer was used to working with. And so, you know, that alone was going to probably hold him back to a degree. And now a clear offensive vision. I mean, Peterson and Press Taylor, I think, will try to maximize Lawrence's abilities. And, you know, it seemed late in the year when Trevor started to at least get in a groove a little bit. And it certainly peaked with the Week 18 game against the Colts. I thought that was his best outing of the year that I saw. But as he used his athleticism a little bit more, it seemed to kind of open things up. And now they get Travis Etienne back. They've added to the receiver room with Zay Jones and Christian Kirk. And, you know, they have some options at tight end, it seems. And, you know, all of a sudden you can see the picture kind of coming together. I mean, they still got to wait for James Robinson coming back. And, you know, the offensive line has to prove itself. But, you know, Doug Peterson has always sort of built his teams around the lines of scrimmage. They could be really good if those two groups come together. I mean, not really good, but really competitive, I think.
Lots to like about the Jacksonville situation this year. 6.5, yeah. The win totals, the juices to the under, but yeah, a lot of positivity there in Jacksonville. Eric, such a pleasure having you on, man. Thanks for doing this. Always great to get your insights, and I'm sure we'll be catching up with you soon here on A Numbers Game. Thanks.
Looking forward to it. Thank you.
Absolutely. All right, we're going to talk Eric Eager. He joins the show next here on ANG. The first inning is unpredictable, but you can place a no-run first inning wager with confidence at BetMGM. Make a no-run first inning prop bet on any Friday MLB game. If only one run is scored in the first, you'll get your stake back and free bets up to $20. That's right. Simply place a single or parlay no-run first inning bet. No runs in the first, no problem. You win. If only one run is scored, get your wager back and free bets up to $20. Take big swings all season long with BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 years of age or older to wager. New and existing customer offer. Opt-in required. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable free bets or site credit. Free bets expire 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Promotional offer not available in Mississippi, Nevada, or New York. If only we were reading that leading into Jason Weingarten, the world's biggest hater of no-run first-inning wagers. Anyway, we'll have Jason coming up in about 15 minutes. For now, though, we welcome you back to the South Point Sportsbook Studio. I'm Ben Wilson here on A Numbers Game. Great to speak with Eric Eager right now, who you see his work at Pro Football Focus. PFF underscore Eric is where you find him on Twitter. Eric, the last time we talked, it was on a primetime action. I know you've been handicapping CFL as well this year. You got any action on Blue Bombers Elks tonight that the people will want to get involved with here? Blue Bombers like a 7-point favorite on the road.
Yeah, I make the game about 9, so I probably would lay, if it was a 7, I'd lay 7. I don't know if I'd lay 7.5. Also, by the way, because of all the COVID stuff in Saskatchewan, that number has gone from, I think, Toronto plus 5.5 or so on the open. Now it's about 1.5. If you still like Toronto, a good teaser is Winnipeg down to 1 point and Toronto up to 7.5 points if you want to tease the CFL, which has been pretty good this year.
Beautiful. I see a couple of sevens still out there, but most of the market on Winnipeg has gone to a 7.5. Eric Eager, he does a little bit of everything. He can help us out on a CFL handicapping as well as NFL thoughts. So that is a good angle to look at here this week in the CFL slate. As far as what we just saw, the big news here in the last 24 hours, Eric, in the NFL, Kyler Murray's contract and the extension there. When you've looked at your numbers on him there from the PFF grades and everything on Kyler, how do you evaluate this deal relative to his actual value that you would assign for a guy like Murray? And just how fair is this extension if you're just looking at the raw numbers evaluations there on Kyler Murray in Arizona?
Well, he was a 3-win player last year, 3 wins above replacement. Generally, you would add, say $10 million per win above replacement at the QB position. Clearly a very valuable player. I don't know, if I'm going to give him $45 million a year if I'm a general manager, but I think the alternative is obviously for the Cardinals. It is different because Steve Keim, Cliff Kingsbury got themselves out of a jam by taking Kyler Murray first overall in 2019. And so they get contract extensions. I think it would look really bad if they then didn't give Murray one, but it's hard. I mean, when your quarterback is on a rookie deal, you have to make it count. And you look at, the Bengals make a Super Bowl with Burrow. The Chiefs make 2 Super Bowls with Mahomes. Obviously, Seattle 2 Super Bowls with Wilson. Even the Panthers made 1 Super Bowl when Cam Newton was on rookie deal money. Because it just gets harder, right? You can't, get DeAndre Hopkins for $27 million APY when your quarterback is making 46. So, I think if you're a Cardinals fan, you're disappointed that the only thing that you came away with in the Kyler Murray era was 1 playoff appearance, 1 playoff game. They were really bad in 18, so they certainly have improved, but they haven't improved necessarily to where they get the real bang for the buck while he's on a rookie deal. And now you're asking him to improve even more because he's making so much more money and he will have a lot less support because, you're obviously taking those resources away from other positions. So they're really in a tough spot. I mean, I would short the Cardinals, not because I think, Cliff sucks or Murray sucks. Mm-hmm. I just think the math sucks for them.
Yeah. I think this is what I asked Eric Edholm a little bit earlier in the show. I want your take on it too. Eric, and it's this whole concept of Arizona being a great early starting team and then fading down the stretch. When you've looked at the data statistically, how much of that is actually real and how much of that is just total random variance that they happen to get off to 2 good starts in 2 consecutive years?
Well, hey, the narrative is true. I mean, they're a top 5 team in expected points added, yards per play, all that kind of stuff the first half of the last 2 years, and they're a bottom feeding offense the last 2 years in the second half of the year. I think both times it coincided with Murray getting injured. So maybe it's not necessarily Cliff losing his fastball and more Murray, being an electric player early in the year and then being injured to the point where not necessarily his rushing production goes down, because last year, the first half of the year, he didn't have a ton of rushing production, but just the threat is gone from that situation once he gets injured. And then, of course, things in that offense don't necessarily turn out as well when they don't have to worry about Murray running the football. But it is real. I think this year will test it, though. I mean, they have Kansas City, the Raiders, and then, their third game of the year, I can't remember exactly.
Rams at home,
They're going to be underdogs. I think they're going to be underdogs in their first 3 games. So But last year they were underdogs in Tennessee. We've won, in fact, they were underdogs in Cleveland. They were underdogs in L.A. Like, they won games outright as road underdogs like four or five times last year. So who knows? I think it's going to be – it's tough for me to think about over for that team, and I am invested on the under because I just – you know, for example, that defense, I don't see them repeating the okay situation they had last year despite bad personnel.
The data scientist for Pro Football Focus, Eric Eager, joining us right now on A Numbers Game. PFF underscore Eric is where you find him on Twitter. Speaking of the Raiders, one of those teams Arizona will have in that early parts of the year. Very interesting. I was looking at some of the PFF passing grade numbers on Derek Carr, where he led the league in your passing grade on the throws inside the numbers last year, but was a bottom 10 quarterback on throws outside the numbers. Naturally, you just wonder, all right, you bring in one of the premier outside receivers in the game, Devontae Adams, to Las Vegas. What do you expect as a result now with Derek Carr? Where do you expect those passing grade numbers to end up this year now, given the different personnel that he's got at his disposal?
Yeah, I think a lot of people view the end of last season with the Raiders as, oh my gosh, they did so well with poor coaching, you know, losing John Gruden and going with Rich Bisaccia. But, you know, you look at Carr, he really blossomed under John Gruden. He was starting to struggle at the end of the Del Rio era. He was... you know, kind of conservative, struggled a lot early in the Gruden era. He got better and better and better. And I think Gruden schemed up throws, you know, over the middle of the field. That's the most valuable, you know, spot of the field to guys like Darren Waller and guys like Hunter Renfrow. And while I think Josh McDaniel is a good offensive mind, I think a lot of people are baking into the cake this idea that Carr is going to improve under McDaniel, when in reality he was improving under Gruden. And I think he's going to have to basically get better fundamentally as a player to stave off regression that might come by virtue of you know, the change of offensive coordinator, the change in head coach. So it's a weird prediction for me. If I had to guess, I think Carr regresses a little bit this year relative to the expectations we all have for him, because I think he played above them the last few years.
No, it's a fascinating way to look at it, too. And I also think when you look at, we have 10 new coaches this year in the NFL, at least from, you know, the circles I've been talking to, Eric, you get this general thought of, all right, well, Josh McDaniels at least has experience, so it's automatically just going to translate. And it's, you know, we forget, okay, it was a complete disaster in Denver. It's been over a decade. Realistically, like, what do you expect from McDaniels coming back for his second stint as an NFL head coach? Like, how much of that do you try to factor in when you're handicapping the Raiders, given that it is a change and it is a new guy there in Vegas?
Yeah, it's hard because if he has success as an individual away from the Belichick nest, it would be singular, right? He would be the exception, not the rule. I mean, these coaches have always struggled away. He seems like a realistic person. I also think the reasons he didn't go to Indianapolis before 2018 are all very valid reasons. I think he's a rational guy in that regard. So I'm bullish on him relative to other Belichick guys, but it's just so hard because Belichick does so many things. And so when a guy like McDaniel, I think, has been one of his best assistants, has success in New England, I always just wonder how real that can be when the guy goes and tries to do it for himself.
Yeah. It's the question we are all kind of wondering coming into the year. Real quick, before we let you go here with about 60 seconds left, Eric, of those 10 new head coaches, which of those 10 do you feel like is in the best position to immediately produce results here coming into 2022?
For betting purposes, I would take Kevin O'Connell at 20-1. That Vikings team, you know, 15-18 the last 2 years, but they haven't lost a game that Kirk Cousins started by more than one score since Christmas of 2020. So that's a team where they could roll the ball out tomorrow and play almost the exact same quality of play and finish like 11-6. And I think if they do, Cousins and Jefferson are not going to produce better numbers than they have the last few years. I think all of the credit goes to Kevin O'Connell. And you know, that means at 20-1 in DraftKings, he's probably a good bet.
That's a very intriguing one. 20-1 on coach of the year. Cousins to lead the league in passing yards, I don't think it's crazy either, which you can find in the 20-1 range as well. Eric Eager, the data scientist from Pro Football Focus, always kind of give us some time here on A Numbers Game. Eric, always a pleasure, my friend. It's always a very enlightening conversation to have you on, and I'm sure we'll be catching up soon. Thanks again.
We'll be right back. Thanks for having me on. Take care.
Absolutely. All right. Our number one in the books here at A Numbers Game Friday from the South Point Sportsbook Studio. We'll catch up with Jason Weingarten next, talking all things Major League Baseball when we return right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.